our government.
Bailout.
Your government.
Energy resources.
Healthcare.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Global financial recession.
The work that needs to be done.
What's the agenda this week? Well, joining us is Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times, in studio. And there's a lot, actually, to take a look at in stories that are happening this week. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning, John.
It's another Monday, and the headline is North Korea. The headline is specifically North Korea sentencing two U.S. reporters who've been in custody since March to 12 years in forced labor, presenting another challenge to the Obama administration. This isn't the first time we've talked about this test of the Obama administration. How do you figure this development either escalates or prolongs what seems to be brewing into an international crisis?
Well, it'll be interesting to see this week, of course, what exactly the administration comes back with. We had Secretary of State Hillary Clinton talking over the weekend about the possibility of putting North Korea back on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. We have a report by David Sanger in the Times talking about the administration considering, actually perhaps with the help of the Chinese, a plan to perhaps intercept North Korean ships that have to do with nuclear technology or transporting nuclear know-how. So on many different fronts, we have the administration confronted by this kind of, to use the former president's phrase, rogue nation, and this kind of really has risen to the top of the rogue nation list now, and they're trying to figure out what options they'll have. But this week, I expect we'll see how hard a line will the administration toe on this, and will those two American journalists really be used as pawns in North Korea's kind of, you know, something to trade?
Well, it seems as though the answer to that question is probably yes, they'll be used as pawns, but with all the sort of inflammatory language regarding North Korea, rogue nation, sponsor of terrorism, it's surprising to me the kind of tone that people take in talking about this sentencing. Listen to this.
I'm actually not surprised that they were sentenced. My feeling was that they would be sentenced to kind of send a message to probably other journalists. And the 12 years is difficult to hear, but I'm hoping that it's more symbolic than anything else and that maybe they'll be released within a matter of months.
That's a friend and former colleague of those journalists, Holly Gibson, talking about, you know, 12-year sentence. She's not alarmed exactly. It's as though this is a chess game. These people are caught in the middle of it. But is that a valid assumption? I mean, it's possible that it's maybe not a chess game and that they're going to stay there for 12 years.
Well, you're right. I mean, this is the danger. It's hard to imagine that, and that may be hard to imagine that even, especially if you're friends of the journalist, but as any foreign correspondent or someone who has been in like situations, it's hard to imagine that kind of long purgatory sentence. It's been a long time since we've seen American journalists withstand that, probably since Terry Anderson, you know, decades ago. It's hard for us to imagine that. And that's one point. But on the second point, I think we can't know. This is North Korea. This is the problem. This is the problem with the Hermit Kingdom. It is hard to have an adversary, as the U.S. has now for a long time with North Korea, which is inscrutable, which you have no idea if they're even playing by the kind of rules of rational realpolitik. And that has really been the problem all along with North Korea. And as we face a nuclear situation with them and perhaps even a succession battle over there right now, we don't know.
Which they're in the middle of.
These are really, really scary questions that no one can actually fathom or answer.
All right. It also appears that this week, at some point, this very familiar voice from the post-9/11 era is going to be back in the news.
The United States government is going to have to first discover what does the pot consist of, and then decide whether to simply distribute the money to victims based on a percentage of what they invested through Madoff, or will there be an attempt to prioritize the claim?
There's the deliberative, rational thinking of Ken Feinberg, who was, of course, the special master after 9/11, who determined the compensation for individual victims of the 9/11 disaster. There he's talking about the Madoff controversy. It appears as though he's going to be named something called a pay czar in the federal government. First of all, what would this person do? Is Ken Feinberg the guy for the job? And what precedent is there for a job like this?
Well, you know, those are all excellent questions. It's ironic that we're now going to have this. It's going to be special master for compensation. It'll probably be the likely title. Will definitely be announced this week. It's going to be a huge story this week. This is the latest in an ongoing tug of war between the administration and the financial sector. Having been rescued by taxpayer dollars, Wall Street, the biggest financial firms in our country, are now trying to get the government off their back. And so this week we're going to see this kind of tug of war take the place of they're going to try to get out. The government will announce this week which banks will be able to get out from under the TARP regulations, will be allowed to repay their TARP money, the Troubled Asset Relief Program that they got billions from.
Right.
And then by the end of the month, be done with that. And the Wall Street firms, the biggest firms, would certainly love to think that after that, they're done with Washington and Washington will be out of their business. But the administration is going to come back with the announcement of Mr. Feinberg as the pays are. And what's going to be interesting to see is who will be under his regulation.
Right.
Number one, once you repay that money, it is not clear that the administration really has a great deal of leeway to make you do whatever it wants as far as pay. And so far, all we've seen so far as far as compensation rules,
sure,
from Washington, from Congress, has been a rule that if you receive TARP money, your top 25 executives, none of them can earn a bonus, an oversized bonus that's more than one-third of their base salary. That's it. Well, what has
Wall
Street done?
That's the only rule.
What has Wall Street done? Wall Street has hiked everyone's base
salary.
Salaries.
There you go.
Obviously. So it's going to be interesting to see how in the world the administration gets around, you know, if you repay the TARP money, we're still going to tell you what you can compensate your top 25 earners in your firm. It's going to be interesting to see how those rules are promulgated when they come out this week, and that's going to be a huge story to watch as far as what happens in the financial sector.
Given the success of the Apple Corporation under Steve Jobs, is there any compensation number that is too high if he comes back? He's now a pancreatic cancer survivor. It looks like Steve Jobs will be back this week, and the stock market will be reacting to that.
Well, it's really interesting. Apple's annual developer conference is happening starting today, and the question is going to be, Apple has not said, they have said Steve Jobs will be back on the job by the end of the month. They have not said, however, he's going to actually be at this conference. The irony is, if he's not at the conference, given the kind of rumors out there in the blogosphere, then Apple may pay a price, even though they never expected him to be there. The rumor mill has generated this expectation. So if he's not there, then I think the kind of geekerati is going to be incredibly disappointed.
The geekerati.
And it'll be interesting to see if...
You heard it first here on the agenda with Marcus Mabry of the New York Times. So let's go to foreign affairs again. Lebanon, an election. The results are coming in. It appears that Hezbollah and Iran have been repudiated by voters in Lebanon. What's the significance of that?
It's usually significant because that was not the expectation. The expectation was for a close race, but one in which Hezbollah would actually come out with its allies on top. And in fact, you have the American allied and backed coalition coming out on top. And that's incredible news. It's incredibly good news for this administration coming right after President Obama's speech last week in Cairo, in which he offered a new hand of peace in the East and offered a new conception of American especially Arab-Islamic relations. There's already talk of an Obama effect. I don't know if that's going to be overblown. We'll see this week whether, when the analysis comes back of who voted and how they actually won. We don't have final results yet, we should say. We'll get a sense of whether or not there is such a thing as an Obama effect or whether or not this was a coincidence whereby the people of Lebanon decided they weren't going to go with Hezbollah.
Well, on Wednesday, a test of the so-called Obama effect will be in the details of Benjamin Netanyahu's speech, a wide-ranging speech that he's billed to talk about his plan for approaching the roadmap and the whole question of Arab-Israeli peace. Of course, the administration is against settlements. Supposedly, Israel has sort of signed up for that, but it's unclear. Is Netanyahu likely to take a hard line here or be conciliatory?
Well, it's in Netanyahu's history, and he's a politician with a long history in Israel, and actually was once the spokesman here in the U.S. way back in the 80s, so we've been familiar with him for decades. He's rarely been a guy who's been conciliatory. He's basically been a hardliner, someone with a very distinct hardcore ideology. It could be a Nixon goes to China moment. He could certainly kind of surprise the opposition in Israel and is
well, let me back
US.
You up there. If it is a Nixon goes to China moment, if Netanyahu does something surprising, is that part of the Obama effect, do you think?
Well, that's interesting. You know, I'm sure supporters of the president will probably say it is, but I think, again, you're dealing with the Middle East. You're talking about so many complexities and kind of three-layer chess here.
All politics is local in Israel.
Exactly.
There you go.
It's hard to imagine that, you know, he gets all the credit for.
Finally, the Obama administration has had a difficulty, it seems to me, getting the message in an entire week on the domestic agenda. They've done well on foreign affairs, but had more difficulty on the domestic side. Healthcare is supposedly the issue this week. What do we look for the administration really trying to get a sustained effort effort there.
Well, you know, they've had this stealth battle going on. It's going to be, and they've kind of had letting their supporters know by through tweeters, through constant email contacts, that they have this big plan coming, this fight coming. The fight really is already being waged in Washington. It'll be interesting to see what publicly they let come out this week.
And the details of the plan will certainly determine how the debate is going to go on Capitol Hill. Marcus Mabry, as always, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Marcus Mabry, international business editor for The New York Times, with your agenda for this week on The Takeaway.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.